I'm joined on this episode by Elsie Valentine. He is the author of The Last Girl Standing and the prequel novella, The Last Girl Standing, The Beginning. We're going to talk about a couple things in this episode. We're going to cover everything from the three character archetypes that you run across when writing female heroines in horror fiction. We're going to talk about inclusiveness in horror and how to fairly write from someone else's viewpoint. We're also going to get into networking, how that helped him put the book together, develop the world, and still continues to help with sales today. We'll talk a little bit about social media, and we just cover a lot. So we're going to sit down and have a fun conversation today with an amazing writer. Here we go. Welcome back to the Writing Fright podcast. I'm your host and fellow author, Tanner Rutledge, and I am joined today by Elsie Valentine. Elsie Valentine is the author of The Last Girl Standing and The Last Girl Standing Beginnings. He's also got a couple of more works coming out and some children's books and younger fiction. How you doing today?
Hi there. Thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for coming on. How long have you been writing professionally?
3 years or so, I would say. So about 3 years ago, I decided to start my first novel. Officially, that's been published just over a year. We just passed the first year anniversary of it coming out. So yeah, kind of 3 years times professionally, I would say.
Cool. Now, when we sit down and we start learning how to write, and we decide to write that first piece of, I don't want to call it consumer fiction, but when we decide to put something out into the world for sale, there's kind of this panic and this rush to learn how to actually structure a novel and how to actually put the story together in a way that it'll sell and that people are going to enjoy it. What did that look like for you when you were learning how to structure your novel and you were learning how to get the story down? What were some of the resources you learned to use to do that?
Well, I actually had a very, very useful resource from what actually prompted me to go from an amateur writer to a professional one. Was that I was volunteering at a lot of comic cons, very small local comic cons. And one of my jobs there was I was asked to host Q&As with various indie authors that they would get to come in, and we would host author Q&As. And before I really spoke to them, I didn't know much about independent publishers. So to me, the idea of ever getting a book published was sort of impossible. And despite the fact that I loved writing, I never sat down and forced myself to write one because I felt like, well, I'd write it and nothing would happen with it. It was talking to these guys that made me realize, you know, you can write a work and you can get it out there. So I had them all the way because we were running these comic cons almost every couple of weeks. So as I was writing it, whenever I had a question, I had a problem, I'd be asking them, so how would you tackle this? What would you do here? And it was really, really useful. Apart from that, the one other tip that I always get is just read your genre, read authors, read things in a similar vein, and see how they structure it and how they do it. And I've also found that quite useful. Although, to be honest, I put an awful lot of my own sort of structure into it. I took a lot from films, obviously, as you've obviously read them. They're very film inspired and they take a lot of sort of inspiration and that kind of flow and things like that.
Nice, they do. And that's something that I've noticed that just about everyone that I have asked, that's been listed, read in your genre and kind of read around it and really get to know it. Now, with Last Girl Standing and this universe you've created, you show a vast knowledge of how the trope works, and you've weaved that into your own mythos, and it starts out following genre tropes, and then you twist it. I think that's something that a lot of horror and horror-adjacent authors that do well in this industry and that do well with publishing in general, they learn how to do that. So when it came to taking this trope of slasher films and the final girl trope and twisting it around into your own thing, what was your process there? How did, when you sat down and you were like, I want to write this slasher novel, how did that world unfold? If you can answer that without spoilers.
No, that's fine. So the sort of idea behind it actually came from two adjacent different things I encountered at the same time, and it kind of inspired the idea. So one was that I was doing a movie marathon of all the Friday the 13th movies. And I was just chuckling because I got to part four, which, if you know those films, is called The Final Chapter. of course, it's part four in an 11 film series still going. And I kind of got a little bit of a chuckle out of it. And then I thought about how there's Saw, the final chapter, there's the final nightmare, there's, and that's always like the title of a film, and it's never the end. So the idea of opening a book with chapter one, the final chapter, entered my head. And so I kind of, so the, initially it was just sort of this spring of an idea of starting a horror book with the end of a slasher movie and calling it the final chapter as a little joke. And that was sort of it. It was just a sort of seed of an idea. And then I read this article. So I've always been quite interested in sort of feminist heroes and how you portray female heroes in fiction to make them three-dimensional, interesting characters. And I read this article about the challenges facing sort of still even now in media, female protagonists, and how they are commonly either completely independent, so they're on their own, they're the only girl in the story. They are so kick-ass, they're brilliant at everything, or they're flipping useless and we're told they're great and they're not, and the man's got to save them all the time. And how those are quite often the three main tropes that, that you get. And this article was saying it's very rare to have a woman who struggles, who fights, and who still wins in the end, who has her own story arc. And I read it and I thought, that's true of everything except horror. Horror does that. And the final girl trope does that. And I'm not saying the final girl trope doesn't have its own sexist problems, because it does, because quite often it's quite exploitive, especially in the old 80s movies. You know, it is essentially an excuse to get a girl in a skimpy outfit and sway in by the end. But when you took the core story elements, but actually this fits the sort of feminist ideal of a good female hero. So I kind of got the idea to explore that. And then I got the, so I had this idea of final girl as a traditional female hero who goes through all these things. I had the idea of playing around with slasher tropes. I just sort of merged them and then thought, what's the best way to make them work? And I'm like, well, if you're starting off with the end of a slasher movie, you're going to have your final girl who has survived. Where does she go from there? And then I kind of came up with the idea of, well, if one, if there's one final girl out there, where are all the others? And I kind of had this idea of bringing them together. And that's essentially where the idea came from. And then sort of I kind of started to take influence from a lot of different things. I know you've spotted before with the Buffy influence is obviously there. Supernatural is a TV show. Some of that comes in. There's certain elements from other bits of media that I like. I took a fair bit for the character of Nina, who's sort of the British leader of the group at first. She's, I always say she's a mashup of John Constantine and Nick Fury. So she's sort of like those two tropes mashed together, right down to an eye patch and a trench coat. So I kind of started playing with things like that, sort of merging together into characters that I like. But yeah, that's essentially kind of where it came from and how it started.
When you're talking about your characters, that was one of the big things that turned me on to this book and this series in general. The way that you've built your characters and their defining personality traits, something that's been in horror and been part of horror for a while and is getting more and more popular and we're seeing it more is inclusion, because so much of horror and so much of these stories are told from the viewpoint of white middle-class male, white middle-class female. And you have characters, leading characters in here that are Asian. Your lead character is a Black female. And we're not, these things aren't happening to them because of that. It's, these are just the people that are in this situation. They're banding together and they're coming together in these horrific situations to come out the other side. And I love that we're getting fiction like that and more inclusiveness in horror. So when it came to designing these characters, when it came to actually getting them down on paper, what was the initial reaction with your betas?
With the inclusion, what's interesting is my very early draft of Last Girl Standing, and this only lasted for a couple of chapters before I decided to change it, was that there was going to be a sort of meta joke that all the members of the Last Girl Standing looked really similar. They were all going to be white girls, blonde, and the joke was going to be these are the people who are always the final girl, and it was going to be like a sort of meta criticism of not doing the diversity thing. But then I kind of sat back and I thought, yes, I'd be sort of hanging a lampshade on it. I'd be criticizing it, but I would also still be doing it. And I thought, no, like if I want to focus on inclusion, I've got to be inclusive. So my first step was just, why don't I just make the main character African-American? You know, I just said, why don't I do that? And I thought, yeah, fine, I'll do that. That's great. And then the inclusion of, so at the core three, obviously one is British, which, like I said, is purely the Constantine influence, really, on someone saying bloody hell and stuff like that through it. And because I'm a British writer myself, and it's set in America, it allowed me to put in a couple of those, there's a couple of little running gags between British and American English and stuff like that. And whenever one of my betas spotted that I had made a mistake, so I had called something the British word for it, I would, rather than just correct it, we would turn it into a joke where Nina would say that and then get corrected and they bicker over what the right term was and things like that. So yeah, that's sort of where the diversity element started to come from. In terms of feedback, I think I did have a couple of people kind of approach me and ask how I set about writing an African-American teenager without kind of making too much of a big deal of it. So that's something that I often see asked, is people say, you know, how do you write a minority character without describing them as a minority? You know, usually in fiction, when you introduce a character, you don't describe their skin tone unless they're not white, for example. And that's immediately a sort of flag of inequality. So I focused on elements of sort of that experience of what it would mean to be black. So there are elements where, like, one of the early ones that I really remember is she sneaks out of her house, and her concern, that there's very early chapters, she sneaks through a neighbor's garden, and the concern of what her neighbor will do if she spots a young black kid trying to sneak into her house compared to a young white kid in this suburban neighborhood. And I kind of try to focus on elements like that. There's a little bit of personal experience there, only a little, because I'm actually quarter Brazilian. But I grew up in a very white British city. So I encountered nowhere near as bad as what kind of the average African-American has to deal with in America. But I've encountered my share of racist comments and racism and feeling uncomfortable because of race. So I did try to factor a little bit of that in there as well. But yeah, it was sort of about building it in an authentic way and then kind of trying to represent each group and make sure that I did put in representation in that way, but still make them three-dimensional characters. So I tried to, you know, not lean on that too much, not be this is the character trait that they are, trope that they are, this race. It was just an aspect of characters.
Yeah, there weren't really stereotypes outside of the trope itself. You just did an amazing job doing this without bringing attention to it. It was just a natural progression. And with watching those movies, with so many of the final girls being the blonde white chick that's left at the end in a bikini top. That was a cool way to bring bring attention to that specific aspect of the trope and then write a fantastic story around it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Moving on into getting Last Girl Standing out. You wrote this over the course of 3 years.
I wrote the actual book took a year, then editing took about another year, and then sort of shopping it around, and then it came out last year. So yeah. It took me about 2 years to kind of write it and then get it out and get it nice. Out there. So there was obviously the first step, and obviously you're an author yourself, so you know this. And the thing that I always tell any wannabe author, anyone who wants to get a book out there, is write the damn thing. Because the amount of people who say, I'd love to be a writer, and you say, well, have you written anything? And they go, no. You go, well, you're not going to get anywhere unless you sit down and you put words on the page and you write a story. So my first step was simply blast through it, write it out, and get like that first draft done. And I'll be honest, there's actually some elements that became very interwoven into the story that initially were just thrown in as placeholders because I was sort of like, I need something to happen in this scene. So again, without getting into too many spoilers, you might remember the gremlin style creatures that become sort of the henchmen of the villain. They were originally purely introduced because I was like, there's been an awful lot of talking and nothing has happened. For quite a few chapters, and I was like, then a gremlin attacked them, and sort of it became interwoven into being the main sort of henchman of the villain, and it became a big part of the story, but it was just a sticky plaster to make things more interesting at first. So I kind of just blasted out this first draft, and then I started reworking it. I started sending it, and again, I have a lot of writing like friends that we've sort of done role plays and things with, so I had people that I could send the first draft to that I was happy to read the first draft because they understood as well what I was trying to do. We were friends, we had been talking about the process, so it wasn't a case of sort of sending out an almost finished product. Then I reworked it over and over. One of the big interesting things, because one of the key elements to the whole tone of the book that wasn't in the first draft at all, was the main character, Ellie, and her fandom of horror novels, horror films and horror tropes and everything. Because originally she was written as sort of, you know, your typical main character that anyone could project onto. And she kind of went through, and all these other characters around her orbit had very strong personalities. And she didn't really have many distinctive traits apart from having stuff happen to her. So, and after doing the first draft and discussing it with some of my beta readers, we kind of discussed what could we do to make her more interesting. And then I came up with the idea of projecting my own horror fandom onto her and having a character that got all the references and was a big horror fan. And that, again, kind of shifted the tone a bit and really, really helped. Once I'd redrafted it a few, couple of other times, I saw some slightly more sort of removed beta readers, people who didn't know me as well, and people who could read it and give me honest feedback. And again, I started adjusting that, bringing that in. Some of the authors that I knew from these comic cons helped and looked over it. And once I finalized it, that was when I started looking for a way to get it out there. And obviously, there are lots and lots of different methods. You could probably do a whole podcast on the minefields of trying to get a book out there, particularly with some of the interesting scams and tricks that you encounter from some of these so-called publishing agencies. We haven't even got into those yet. try and charge you an awful lot up front and things. And I searched for quite a long time. And then I came across a company called TerraTract that were very good at giving sort of indie authors an opportunity. And actually someone saw me talking about my book in a writer's group and recommended me to them. They saw the recommendation and then we started chatting and then they were keen to publish it. So that's kind of how I ended up there.
Did you go through any editing or did you hire any editors before you went into TerraTract and went through their process? Or
I didn't. I used some non-sort of professional volunteer editors. I had a fellow author friend of mine who helped me edit it and read it through and edited it. But at the time, I didn't really have the finances to hire a professional editor. Obviously, I recommend it if you can afford it, because it really does help. But at this point, I relied on friends and family and then on TerraTract themselves because they had editing.
That's awesome. I mean, if you can get in with any sort of indie publisher or anybody that's going to run it through professional edits for you, that is hands down the way to go. Now, with getting in, once you got the book accepted by TerraTract, what was your process like after that, and how long was it to get the book out?
It was quite fast, I think. It was a couple of months to get it on their release schedule, so it was pretty quick. And like I said, they turned it out pretty fast. What actually delayed it, in a sense, was that I wanted to launch it with something, and I was trying to think of good launch techniques. And that was where the beginning came from. So the beginning was, initially, it was going to just be a very short story that I wanted to release for free. My idea was to release it for free, get you to read it, and then get you to read the book. It turned into a bit more of a novella because it became a bit longer. That was actually a very quick rush job. I wrote that over, I think, 3 weeks I wrote it. So I just had the idea. I had an awful lot of fun writing it. A bit of context, the beginning is the horror movie, essentially the main character survived before the main book. So I just took it as, what if I wrote a Friday the 13th movie? And that was my approach. And instead of trying to subvert everything and be clever, I just wrote straight Friday the 13th slasher. It was really fun. So I wrote that. And then because of how that came out, they actually wanted to release that first. So it actually knocked the main novel back, I think, by a month while they released that. But, you know, it was fine. So, yeah, and then like I said, those two books came out. They would occasionally, they will, you know, promote them. They will help get it out there. What was interesting with The Last Girl Standing is it came out with a cover designed by TerraTract. And I'm a bit of a Photoshop amateur in my spare time. The current cover for Last Girl Standing is one that I designed because I wanted something a bit more meta. Our original cover was just sort of a standard horror book cover. It was very good. It was designed by them. It was very, very nice, but it wasn't quite getting that meta tone, which is where I then designed this VHS cassette tape style cover. And once I'd done that, we saw sales spike a fair bit. It kind of really grabbed people's attention. People really liked it. Then I discovered it was very similar to the cover to My Best Friend's Exorcism, which I felt a little bit guilty about. But now Grady Hendrix has just released the Final Girls support group. And I'm like, well, you know, you stole my idea, Grady. I'm going to steal your cover. I'm sure he didn't, by the way. I'm sure he has no idea who I am and has never read my book, but that was my little justification.
It's funny you say that. In Facebook, when I'm going through and I'm reading the recommendations and people talking about different books, whenever The Last Girl Standing comes up, there's always a question: is this like Final Girl Support Group?
Yeah.
And just to answer that here, it is not. It is totally, totally different. Last Girl Standing is a it's more of a meta thrill ride.
Yes.
Yeah. Grady's book.
I haven't actually read Final Girl Support Group yet. I want to, but I also kind of keep putting it off.
It's good. It's different. It's like a, it's almost like a narrative breakdown of the trope.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I do need to check it out. It's on my list of ones to check out. But yes, that's kind of how that journey went.
Man, that's fantastic. I can't believe it got it. You went with a publisher, even indie publishers. Some of the ones that I've talked to and authors that have done that, it's been like a year before their book hits the shelves.
Yes, yeah.
Just because of the process.
Yeah. Tarot Tract are very, very fast. And quite good. Because I think it's because they still publish, they use Amazon as their publisher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they get it all printed through Amazon View. But It's very good when you're a first-time author because you have that sort of security blanket of people who know what they're doing, people who edited, people who released other books. It's very good for networking because you're part of this group of authors. Work for Tetra. I mean, I always say independent publishing, getting your book published independently is brilliant and certainly not to be looked down upon any indie authors because it's absolutely fantastic. But you do have to be able to do everything yourself, including the marketing. And you need to be very good at it. I didn't have the confidence that I would be able to do it myself. So I wanted to go with someone to help. And that's why I went to an indie publisher.
Awesome. I'm launching an imprint with the release of my novel The Haints. I'll be doing the Writing Fright press imprint, along with hopefully a magazine coming out six times a year, and bringing on some more authors with that. But yeah, if you're going indie, the two ways to do it is if you've got the finances to be able to hire a good editing team, that's a developmental, a line editor, a proofreader, maybe a couple rounds through each of those, then absolutely do it yourself. But if you don't have the funds to hire your own editor, hire your own team, going through a small press or indie press like Tarot Tract, hands down the best way to get the best version of your book out there, because it takes a team to do this. And if for the listeners out there with talking to Elsie Valentine, with talking to the authors that we've had on here, the thing that that everybody says, the common thread through all of this is you don't do it alone. I don't even know how many people look at your book, give you feedback. You did the panels at Comic-Con to talk to authors and get to know people and bring in their expertise and learn from them. And almost like you made your own mastermind. And that's how you learn and that's how you get ahead. Your book was recommended to Tarot Tract by another author from a critique group. So for all those authors out there, all those people that are looking to get their book out, you're not going to do it alone. Go out and meet people, join an association, join a writing group, and just get out and start networking and talking to other writers to get your stuff out there.
Absolutely. And I also say the other thing that even if you think you are the greatest author in the world and you can write something that's amazing with absolutely no help, you're wrong. It will still be better if you speak to somebody else. But B, the networking is still vital, even when it comes to sales, because when you release that book, getting people to look at it and buy it is difficult. And if the bigger your support network, the better, because all it takes is one of those horror groups. So I think probably the one that I suspect you might have actually initially seen me in is Books of Horror, which is a fantastic Facebook group for networking and recommending. And if you're involved in a site like that, when you bring out your book, people who know you, who've spoken to you, are immediately interested. And even if you advertise it, you only sell to five people on there, those five people will recommend it later on, then you get another five, and it builds up. So it, that kind of networking is brilliant, even from a sales point of view, let alone a development point of view, which is also invaluable. If any of your listeners read Last Girl Standing, like I said earlier, if I didn't rely on, didn't speak to my beta readers, Ellie would not like horror movies. So if you read The Last Girl Standing and think about that, that's just crazy, because that is sort of the spine of the entire story. But that wouldn't exist without the help that I had.
Yeah, that's a fantastic piece of advice. Another thing that I wanted to mention real quick, you did your own cover art for the book that is out right now. So I didn't see the original cover until I pulled you up on Goodreads earlier. When I found you, I was researching the next book that I'm putting out, which is a slasher with a bit of a twist. And I was looking for good pieces of work in that genre to read through and learn it. We talked about that earlier. And your cover is what drew me to your book when I was going through it. And it was the one you did. And I just saw the one that it was originally published with. I don't know if I would have bought that.
No, I had that from a lot of people. And that image, I don't dislike the image that we used, because the idea behind it, once you sat down and had someone explain it to you and look at the whole image, it's quite clever, because the idea is it's a girl holding bloody axe and the monster is reflected in the blood of the axe. And it's sort of a flip on what might be the standard horror image of a monster with a weapon and the girl looking terrified in it. But it didn't really work in the sort of angle it was put. It was hard to tell quite what it was. It was very bloody and very sort of traditionally horror-ish. And like I said, I wanted something that really spoke more to the sort of meta fiction angle of it. And like I said, I'm a bit of an amateur Photoshop artist. I like playing around in Photoshop. I like doing cosplay. So a lot of the images on the front sort of stem from cosplay bits. So two of the monsters on the front are me in different costumes. And one is one of my best friends who is a ghost, but was in fact dressed as a Peaky Blinder. And we just kind of had a bit of a ghost. And like I said, I came up with the idea of essentially it was inverting the Friday the 13th poster. Classic Friday the 13th poster is sort of the outline of the killer. And it's not Jason because it's the original film, but still. And the group of teenagers looking terrified inside the silhouette. So I just swapped it around. So it was the outline of a girl with a bloody knife. And the monsters were inside the silhouette.
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah. And then, again, I like that idea, but I needed something to push the meta edge even further, particularly if you didn't recognize the parody of the Friday the 13th cover. So I went with the VHS cassette tape design, just because I like things like that. I like the VHS cassette tape design. I like that I could, when I sell them in person, I have little bookmarks that look like a VHS cassette for it, you know, and it's just a nice little meta twist. So I kind of came up with that. And like I said, the design really did make a difference. It drew people to it. I think it made people understand the tone a bit more. It was fun. And yeah, I was really sort of proud of how that design came out. Designing your own cover is certainly doable. If you're someone who is good at design, by all means do it. But I always think you need to have a good, clear idea, and you need to have respect for your abilities. So don't try and do something you cannot do. So for example, my children's book is completely unrelated to horror, so I won't get into it too much. But I've got a children's book that I'm planning to release fairly soon, depending on which angle I find. And if I don't find a publisher for it, and I do independently publish it, I am going to have to hire a cover artist for it, because for a children's book I need sort of quirky cartoon art, and I can't do that. I can't draw. So I can do Photoshop, I can do photo designs, but that doesn't work for a children's book cover. So I can't really do my own cover for a children's book. So I know there I'm going to have to hire someone. And whether or not, you know, I know some friends who are artists, you know, whether I go down that route or professionally look, it's fine to make your own cover. But like I said, only do it if you know you've got the skill, because otherwise it won't sell. Like you said, people say don't judge a book by its cover, but that's all we do. That's what a cover's for.
Yep. You know, your cover is your cover and your blurb are your two most important pieces of copy. And I'm in the same boat, except I have no artistic ability whatsoever outside of writing. So I'm in the process of looking for I've got it narrowed down to a couple, a good cover designer who takes notes. I have a background as a copywriter. So I know how to like do the basic shapes and plug out and give the graphic designer details of what I'm looking for and elements. And then just also dial the ego back and let them take off with it, because the baby that the two of you make there is a little bit you and a little bit the artist, and it should come
absolutely
out absolutely better.
Again, I've sort of been there. I think if you don't have that perfect image in your head of exactly what you want, it can be really good to speak to the professionals who do this for a living and say, what would sell, what would look good, and let them do it. I completely agree with that.
How can people find you? Where are you on social media and your author site?
So I the only real author site I have at the moment is Facebook. So I have Facebook and I'm on there as LC Valentine. There is TerrorTrack have their own website, which I think is just terrortrack.com. So I'm kind of on there and all their releases are on there. You will shortly as well be able to find me on Fireside Horror, which is an audio company. So I signed a contract last week, actually, with doing audio productions of The Last Girl Standing. So that'll be on there.
Nice.
So I'm quite excited to hear. I'm quite looking forward to that. So I'm kind of available. Those are the three main places to find me. I do have Twitter, but I'm really bad at using it. Like, really bad. Twitter's strongly recommended for any indie authors, but I've just never really got into the habit of using it. So you can find me as LC Valentine on Twitter, but I don't say anything on there, so there's probably not much point.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'll be looking for those audio productions.
Brilliant. Thank you.
And if you guys out there, if you have not checked out Last Girl Standing and Last Girl Standing the Beginning, they are just a fun thrill ride. So they play on horror tropes with the slasher and the final girl genres, throw in, I hate saying the word fan service, but there's a lot of nostalgia from the early slashers that a lot of us writers and a lot of the movies and stories that got a lot of us into horror as writers. So absolutely check those out. I will be looking for more works coming out from LC Valentine as he publishes more in that universe.
So I've got two more coming, so might be a while, but I have. And then, you know, further ideas. My objective is to get to a 10th book just so I can do Last Girl Standing X in space.
Yes.
That's my objective, because every horror franchise ends up in space. So I want to get to the 10th one so I can call it X and in space.
That's what we're going for. Check it out. Follow him all the way to the Final Girls 10 in space. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Writing Fright podcast. You can follow us on all social media network platforms at Writing Fright. That's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, Discord, and Slasher. If you haven't heard of Slasher, it is the new social media platform for horror enthusiasts and content creators. So if you're not already, go ahead and jump on there. They have everything from movie reviews to hooking up with other horror enthusiasts. I think there's even a dating thing on that platform. So you can find us there. You can also email me at writingfright@gmail.com. Make sure to follow us, especially on Instagram, where we'll be posting some different updates and some special content with book reviews and some other stuff we're doing. We'll also be posting book reviews on Slasher. All right, so I will see you in 2 weeks for our next author interview. And actually, we'll have an episode coming out next week that is one of our old school episodes. We've had some traction with the book. I've learned a couple of lessons, and we're going to sit down for about 10 or 15 minutes and see if any of that is stuff that you can put into practice in your own writing.